Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2012 Home Education Conference held in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
My name is Nicolene Peck, and this class is called Teaching Self-Government When It Doesn't Seem Possible. Does that sound like pie in the sky? I don't know how many of you are familiar with the term self-government, but my definition of self-government is being able to determine the cause and effect of any given situation and possessing a knowledge of your own behaviors so that you can control them. I'll say that one more time. Just because with this presentation, I never know where it's going to go. Otherwise, I would have given you a PowerPoint. My apologies. But I always get frustrated because I'm like, oh, I already did that. And then I'm just messing with the machine the whole time. So I didn't bring you one. I'm sorry about that. It is being able to determine the cause and effect of any given situation and possessing a knowledge of your own behaviors so that you can control them. It requires quite a bit of analysis to have self-government. You have to be able to see yourself almost as if you stepped back and went, wow, look what I do. That's a pretty mature skill to be able to have, actually. And it's something that you have to teach children. There's certain language. I'm going to get into some of that today. So, let's talk a little bit about the problems. There are a lot of problems with raising children. Or maybe we shouldn't focus on that negative word. Maybe we should just say obstacles or struggles. Maybe headaches is the word. I don't know. But there are things that make it difficult sometimes. What are some of them? Can you holler out some of the things that are struggles for you?
TV.
What's that? TV. TV getting in the way. Like it's quite an attraction, isn't it? Yeah, okay, television. What else is hard? What kind of behaviors or things? Yes?
Agency.
Wait a minute. Isn't agency divinely inspired? Isn't that part of the plan? No, but it going wrong, right? As they get older, they get to make choices, and oftentimes they're not self-governing enough to know what the right one is, right? Yes. One other one back here.
Inflexibility.
So stubbornness, right? Being so hard-headed, strong-willed, some people call it. Yes. Stiff-necked. I've heard that term. Okay, yes. Any other hard things that we want to talk about? Yes.
Whining.
I call that not accepting a no answer. Or not disagreeing appropriately. Absolutely. That's a difficult one, isn't it? Yes?
Sibling relationship.
Sibling relationship. Some people call it sibling rivalry, right? Yes. When they contend with each other because of selfishness, right? Laziness, selfishness. Ah, they all infiltrate our homes. Okay, back. There was someone back there. Uh-huh. Distractibility, that goes with TV, right? And all those other things. And defiance, because they know stuff, right? And you don't get it, right? Okay, yeah.
I don't even know what to call it, but when you're in their face in the dirt, you know.
Ah, okay. So them just attaching, you're the enemy, right? So that's actually like power struggle mentality. Right? So that they are going, okay, you think you have power, but I feel pretty powerful, so I think I'm going to go ahead and take over from here. Right? Okay. And are there other ones? I haven't even looked at this side of the room. Yes?
Hate to work.
Hate to work. Okay, so laziness, or again, it could go back to the power struggle thing. Work. You know, we're commanded to teach our children how to work. And for some reason nowadays, it's like out of fashion or something. Somebody's been spreading some rumor about work and how you don't want to do it, or I don't know. Was there another one? I think I saw. Okay, we'll take these two, three more, and then we'll be done. Yeah?
Emotional, just always riding on their emotions.
Emotionally fed people. Being reactive, perhaps. so that they are, they're just taking each moment with what happens, what they feel in the moment. Yeah, I believe in teaching people to be proactive as opposed to reactive. Those two things are opposites from each other. If we live in reactive, we will always be upset. And that's when the emotions always take over. There was another one back here. Yes?
Everything that everybody has already said. my kids are smarter than me. So they, yeah, they.
Is this according to you or according to them? Because there's a difference.
Well, no. It's real. They're more technologically advanced than I am.
Okay.
So,
that's impressive.
So there's defiance going on there, but
definitely. That's called dishonesty, actually. It's covert,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So if they're overriding your passwords. Now, you're saying they're smarter than you. They don't have as much life experience. Please always hold on to that.
Okay.
Because okay. That's one thing that does set us apart, see, from the children. And hopefully wisdom and just savviness are completely different. And that you always keep that in mind. However, it is true that that can happen nowadays. My 15-year-old, he's the content manager for my site. Okay, so yeah, he's pretty amazing, right? He ran a whole political campaign a few months back. And I mean, and he's 15. Yeah, he's a really bright boy. And I've made him to be such. But I would not allow him, and maybe this will help you, this one thing. I would not allow him to be my content manager, my shipping department, all the things that he does, unless I knew he was at a certain level of self-governance. Because self-government is essential to being an adult, a functioning, effective adult. And so there needs to be a standard for when all of that stuff can be unleashed and be safe. Otherwise, it's covert. Okay? And that's something you'll spell out in your family standard, and I know you're familiar with that because you've read a lot of my stuff. There was one more question I was going to answer right here.
I was going to say bossiness.
Like bossiness.
The child bossing you or trying to boss you around.
Because they know so much, right? Okay, so they're bossy and they're telling you what to do and how you can be a parent and how. And you know what that means? That means you've taught them a lot of correct principles. But that sometimes you're not consistent with what you do. To some degree, also, it's a manipulative tactic, right? So if they can switch the tide and make you look bad, then all of a sudden they don't have to face what's going on with themselves. There's so many of these things. I'm giving them quick little analyses, but I'm hoping that that'll help us and help me for sure understand exactly where we're going with this class today and the focus that we need to have, because I could talk for 7 hours. People that have my audio class know I can. People that have my implementation class know I can talk for about 3 weeks straight. So I could talk for a really long time. But the one thing I want to focus on is what you need the most of. And so I wanted to get a feeling of that. And I also hope that me analyzing a little bit shows you, oh, wait a minute, this isn't as complicated as it might seem. In the moment when I'm emotional, when I'm feeling like the world's caving in, and that we didn't accomplish one thing with homeschool that day, and the children all freaked out, and I didn't get dinner made, that really, truly, all is not lost. Probably the family just needs a little bit of a structural shift, and they need to learn how to communicate effectively. If the family can communicate effectively and have a good structure that backs you up in everything you do with the school and the parenting, then it really is smooth sailing. At first, it's kind of like a bumpy road learning new things, but then you're on the superhighway. And it's constant work always to maintain the roads, but it really is a super parenting highway. There was another question. Is there a question here? Okay, that the child is independent, so strong that she won't allow you to mentor her. You have a relationship problem. It's a disconnection. And so the type of structure that you need to set up is one that unites you together, that gives her ownership of her behaviors, because I'm guessing it's your fault a lot. Yeah, so I'm gonna help you with that. Should we dive in? Let's get going. Okay, so on in the handout packet, I'm not gonna spend a lot of time going through these, but in the handout packet, there are some assessment questions for my class. And if you would take some time and do those at home or when you have free time, assessment is important. The key to making any change within yourself that is ever going to be lasting is assessment. That is the key. That is the very first key to self-government, is being able to assess. And as we go through the self-government teaching today, I hope that you will be able to see how the assessment happens in a minute-by-minute, day-by-day way. First off, I want to give you an image. Some of you might have heard me share this before, but I really do look at parenting as a picture of a wagon wheel. So you know the hub of the wagon wheel in the middle, that's a very sturdy, thick part. Everything's rooted into that middle part of the wagon wheel. That is our core principles. That's where your religion, your morals, your values, your beliefs, all of those things go. That's the hub of the wagon wheel. Then all the spokes that stick into that are things like math, scripture study, church, everything that we teach, you know, communication skills, everything, self-government skills, the things I'm talking about today, they are part of the skill sets to make a good adult, and they stick into that hub. But if we were to drive the wheel just on that, we would have a problem, wouldn't we? It just wouldn't work, because there's that band that goes around the whole outside of the wagon wheel that holds everything together. That band is your relationship. The relationship is what helps you teach your children anything. If the relationship is not tight, all of the spokes will fall out, and you will end up with a whole bunch of spare parts to a wagon wheel. The relationship is what helps your children want to learn from you. Otherwise, it's a power struggle. You're trying to force that ring onto that person over and over again, and they're trying to push it off. So I want to talk today about that wagon wheel. That is so important. Whenever we talk about any of these concerns that we've all just mentioned today, whether somebody's bossy or somebody's defiant or somebody's dishonest or distracted or whatever it happens to be, every one of those things affects your relationship. And if your relationship is damaged because you don't know how to handle that one particular behavior, then every other teaching that happens in your home will be difficult. It will feel like a power struggle. So, now that I just drug you through the mud and made you feel like garbage, hopefully I didn't. Hopefully I gave you an idea, though, that every single one of us, and by going through this, are in some sort of predicament in one relationship or another in our lives. Relationships are eternal. They are the reason we are here, to perfect relationships, to carry them with us forever. That is the grand message, is it not? So we can't get so hung up in the one behavior that we allow it to damage our relationships. But that does not mean that we become passive and ignore it either. And I'll talk more about the way that we handle, how we not become passive in the next class that I give called The Power of Calm. All right, I want to share with you, before we can talk about the actual skills to teaching self-government, we have to talk about the type of a structure that is set up in your home. I call it a family government. So the family government creates the atmosphere where self-government can be taught and learned. And I want to share with you just six of the principles of self-government today. I oftentimes share more, but we're going to run through these pretty fast because, if possible, and I know I always say this and sometimes it happens and lots of times it doesn't, but if possible, I want to do some practicing on some of these behaviors at the end, if we can, on how I would correct some of these exact behaviors, if we've got time. All right, so number one effective principle for setting up a family government, and this one directly relates to the wagon wheel, and that is family activities. You absolutely must have regular family activities. There is a reason that the prophet says have family home evening. I mean, it's more than just like, because there's a whole bunch of other stuff in the world and we wouldn't take time. No, it's because that's where you validate yourself, that you can correct them the whole rest of the week, because you have this moment where it's not about correcting them, it's about uniting with them. And hopefully it feels that way all week, every week. But worst case scenario, you at least have one moment that you've scheduled every week for the specific purpose of connecting with the children. So make sure that you have family activities. We also believe in the idea of anticipation. So we don't just pull up to the park and say, okay, for family activity, we're going to go to the park. That still is a family activity. It's still good. But we like our children to think of it, you know, like when you're going to go for a big trip somewhere. Maybe you're going to Disneyland, or maybe Christmas is around the corner and everyone's dreaming of Christmas. We want our family activities to be memorable like those trips and those wonderful holidays are. So what we do is we make sure that they are planned at least one day ahead of time, so that those little children who, you know, pack their bags to go swimming like 3 hours before it's swimming time actually have the opportunity to dream about the swimming experience with the family. Because then it's memorable. Then it becomes a family activity that they will hold on to for their lives and through the relationships when maybe there's a few corrections that have to happen, which probably happen every single day. I want you to know my children get corrected every single day, multiple times. There really is no such thing as perfect children. You always have to correct them all the time. So please don't get the idea that I'll be able to give you something which will make it so you don't have to do that. Otherwise, they wouldn't need us. We do have to correct them all the time. Okay, number two, acceptance. I know that there's a lot of pro and con ideas with this word, acceptance, but I choose to think of it this way. So my child just dumped the whole food storage bucket of, you know, wheat or rice or whatever in the storage room, right? It happened. You know what? It happened. I accept that. What would it look like if I didn't accept that? Maybe you should come show us. No. If I did not accept it, it might look like, holy cow, what did you just do? Oh my word, I told you not to do that, blah, 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 right? That is what it would look like if I didn't accept it. But because I do believe in acceptance, then I can look at it and go, well, that just happened. I'll give you a really good example. I've got a movie that we're in the process of making. My 15-year-old's making it for us. There's a gentleman that I'm going to do some joint venturing with, and he flew out from Florida. He paid for his plane tickets, flew out from Florida, stayed at our house so he could see things firsthand, and we paid a camera crew to come and film all the footage. They loaded the footage into two separate places. This is probably getting to be too detailed. But anyway, the last day, my son said to the guy loading the footage, oh, don't back it up on there. We don't have time. Plus, it's getting full. Just put it here. It'll be fine. I'll put it somewhere else later. I said, okay. The day we dropped the guy off at the airport and my son's starting to work on the footage to make the video, my nephew walks by and hits the cord and the hard drive goes, psh! And I said, oh, that just happened. My sister-in-law was like, Davis, what are you doing? You know, and I'm like, no, don't worry. That's just how it goes. So we lost a day and a half of footage. We'll see how the movie turns out. Anyway, it's all about perseverance. The Lord had a plan somehow. Okay, anyway, so I believe in acceptance. I also believe that if you're going to make a change with a person, you have to accept they are where they are. Not just the ideal that's in your head of where you want them to be. We all have a picture of where we want them to be. But when we're beginning a reformation process, they are where they are. And that means that you have to not take that personally. Okay? Home should feel like the safest place to make mistakes. If you can remember that. I don't know if you can all see my shoes. Let's see. I used to be a dancer, but can you see my shoes? See how fancy they are? Okay. So, I have these cool springs on my shoes, and I want to tell you why. I have springs on my shoes because I had a bike accident. Well, that's a whole other story. Like, I could tell you about that one. Very spiritual experience. But I had a bike accident. I was paralyzed from the neck down. And I, if I stood in front of you all day and spoke, you know, then I would be hobbling around by the end of the day. So I wear these great shoes. But it really wasn't the bike accident that makes me have all these herniations and problems in my back. It was because my mother was so worried about the bike accident having the effect on me that she always told me to suck it in, suck in my stomach. Because after, I was like, you know how little kids have that sway back and, you know, and they stick out their stomach. I was 9 years old, and I would stand like that. And she thought it had to do with the bike accident because I was one of her oldest children. She had no idea that nine-year-olds just do that. Anyway, and so she was always telling me, oh, suck, you know, suck it in and tuck it under. And then I would go to dance class, and I would be at the bar, and they would say, suck it or tuck it and suck it and lift it and drop it. And, oh, right? There you are. You're ready to go. And I would stand there, and I remember thinking, this is what normal people feel like. I am so messed up, right? I couldn't hold that all the time. And so for years and years, I walked around sucking and tucking, even until I got married. And so I have this tremendous problem in my back where it really truly is a miracle that I'm walking. The reason why I share that is because, now she didn't know, but there are things that we might tell our children. Things like, oh, you're getting a little chubby. Or, you know, oh, you know, save some for somebody else. Or, you know, whatever it is, things that we say, okay, to our children that can actually damage them. People have eating disorders, men and women alike, all over the world because somebody said something like that. Please be careful. At the same time, we do need to give our children criticism such as, you know, I think we need to talk about deodorant, you know, and about when's a good time to start having deodorant, and let's go get you one, and, you know, and stuff like that. Or, I see fungus growing on your teeth, let's go, and, you know, whatever it is. There are things that sometimes we do have to, you know, give criticism about. If you never criticize your children, then they will have a very difficult time, you know, in life and with social skills in general. People do need to know how to take criticism and correction. That is part of life. You all know people who can't take criticism, right? They're not happy people. You feel like you're walking on eggshells when you're around them. That's not a safe place for them then. Home should be the safest place to make mistakes, which means we correct what needs to, and we just really don't on the other stuff. Okay, number three, love and mercy. Of course we love our children. That needs to be evident in everything that we do. That feeling of love, even when they are in a rage, can permeate. I have had to hold teenagers who were threatening to take their own lives and who were possibly threatening to take mine. I have had to hold them and calm them because they were in such grave danger. I've had to hold toddlers on timeout who would thrash because they didn't want to have to learn how to calm themselves down. And when I hold them in my heart on purpose, I think, I love you. I love you. Even though I'm holding you, I love you. This is not about a struggle for me. Parenting is not about a struggle. It can't be. If it is about a struggle, then you will never, ever be proactive. It will always be a reactive thing for you, and it will get the better of you 9 times out of 10. Number four, trust. I believe in trusting in the goodness in other people. I have never held a baby in my arms and thought, what a wicked child. I never have. Every single one of them are so pure. They're from heaven. They come that way wanting to do good, right? So why, after a while, do we start thinking that about them? They're just doing this to push my buttons, to get me, blah, blah, blah. Why do we think that about them? If a person, even if it's subconscious, knows you feel that way about them, are they inspired to connect to you and to change? It's not going to happen. So I believe in trusting in their goodness. In my book, and I didn't bring one, there's a wonderful picture of me. I look good as a cartoon, by the way. You should really check it out. Anyway, there's this cute picture of me putting my hand on somebody's face. And I'm going to do it to your face, Sharon. So that when my children come and talk to me and something has gone wrong, my little ones especially, I put my hand right there. Or possibly I touch them like this. What do you feel like? Nervous? I feel nervous. But do you feel that I love you?
Yeah, it's a positive feeling.
Okay. So even though I'm... She's like, you're freaking me out. Okay. Anyway. No, it's something where it's a love. It's a connection point. So that even though I'm telling them something that needs to change... My connection with them, my body touching them, is my spirit being able to connect with their spirit. Because the goal of self-government is a change of heart. When a person chooses to change their own behavior, they choose to have a change of heart. That is the goal. I am not making perfect children. I told you this before, but I didn't tell you what I was making. And this is what I have trust in. I am making joyful adults who know what their mission in life is and can't wait to fight for it and have solid relationships with God and family. That's what I'm making in my family. So they're going to mess up every single day because they're not perfect children. But what we're shooting for is so much greater that it makes all those mess up moments not really mean that much. All right, number five. Number five is a family economy. Now, when I say economy, I mean your system in your home of pluses and minuses. Some people would say that's their system of, you know, privileges or negative consequences. And definitely, that's what we're talking about here. There should be positive consequences and negative consequences in your family. Your family economy should be established by you and your spouse. You need to be on the same page about this, because if dad is grounding the kids for a week and mom is giving them an extra chore, they're going to start playing you guys against each other. You've got to be on the same page. You've got to know what that base of your system is. And it's just one of the things in the foundation of your system. Some people get very over-focused on just the economy aspect and not the teaching aspect. So I'm not going to spend a ton of time here, but I will say positive consequences can teach your children to behave even more than negative consequences can. I don't mean bribery either, because bribery is a manipulation and it is wrong. So if something bad is happening, you don't bribe someone to make a change. But I am here with you in Virginia, and my little family is at home. And guess what they're doing right now? Homeschool. They're doing their school. They're very self-governing, even my 8-year-old. And one thing that I did to help them be self-governing is I set up a positive consequence that happens every day for when they do their stewardships and their school. I have these little bags that are set up. They're little grab bags. It says, Porter, Wednesday. Porter, Thursday, while I'm gone here. So he knows that after he does his violin, his piano, his math, his reading, his stewardship, his geography study, all those things, this is my 8-year-old, then he can report to his big sister and she can say, yep, you can go ahead and have your grab bag for the day. That doesn't need to be a negative consequence because the positive matters enough to him. So keep that in mind. Also, praise is a positive consequence. Yes? That's the beautiful thing. like a 99-cent bag of Swedish fish in one, you know, and it's like a bouncy ball in the other. It doesn't matter. It's a surprise. He's eight. It's all good, right? Yeah, whatever you want. It doesn't even matter. I put a dollar in one bag. They'll be thrilled about that one. He like lifts it up before they're organizing him, right, the night before I leave. This one's so light, Mom. Great. It's like a sticker, they're thinking. Uh-huh.
I was going to say, for my son, he loves trains. Like, love is an understatement.
Uh-huh.
So what I did is I set up a chore chart.
Uh-huh.
And when he does his chores, like, you know, he knows what trains to do. He gets a train sticker next to each thing.
Oh, nice.
He knows once he gets on the train, then he gets kind of like...
Then there's something, a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for the listening audience, her son loves trains, so she has a chart. This is where those charts come into play in the family economy. The thing with charts is you can't usually keep them for the long term. We've done charts before. They last maybe for a couple months, and then all of a sudden everybody forgets about the chart. So those you do have to be, I mean, some kids it may work for the long term, but for my family, for me, I like things that I can follow through with. So I have 4 negative consequences. That's it. And they are for everything. The first one is an extra chore, always an extra chore, because work builds character. So Samuel Smiles in his book Character, which I love, says, the antidote for a sick character is work. And we believe that at our house. So if a person doesn't follow instructions, they earn an extra chore. No big deal. If they don't accept a no answer, they earn an extra chore. But then if they go out of instructional control, which means they're going to have a full-on power struggle with me or pout and not talk to me or whatever it is, then there's 3 other things that we're going to use for what I call the rule of 3. And I hope to get to that with you today. If not, it is for sure covered in the next class. I don't even know when I end, but she'll hold up a sign. So, okay. Oh, the 3, oh, yeah, please, yeah, sorry about that. I'm like, yeah, let's move on. Okay, sorry, my head's so full. Yours is going, just trying to figure mine out. Sorry about that, good question. Okay, the other 3 things for the rule of 3 are a major maintenance, and a major maintenance is a big job, something that might take a half hour or an hour, like weeding a certain garden bed or cleaning out the refrigerator or something like that. And then there's sodas or problem-solving exercises. And, wow, they're a written exercise or can be done as a verbal exercise that we do with the children, equivalent to a pros and cons list. I actually wrote a great article on my blog, just published it a couple of days ago, on teachingselfgovernment.com, and it's called When Your Child Won't Sit Still in Church, or something like that. And I talk about how I did a soda with my 8-year-old. And so you can go on there and you can see that. Yeah, it's an acronym for... a problem-solving exercise that we do. And then the last one, this is the biggest whammy, and thank you for bringing this up, because you do need to know how far you will go, because otherwise there are some people who like to up the ante because they want the child to feel pain. They feel like the only way that a person can change is if they feel pain. I want you to know that's a lie, okay? That's just something coming from the emotional knot in you. That really is not a truth, okay? So it's 24 hours of no privileges. And that means they work and do problem solving exercises for 24 hours. And sometimes you can take time off for school if you want to. Okay? They love school on those days, if that's going to happen. Okay. Anyway, so that is it. My foster children were not allowed to go to school when they lost their privileges for 24 hours, because that was too, you know, they weren't able to. Anyway, they do work. And it's not something like where you're ornery about it the whole time. No way. You accept, trust, help, you're nurturing. It's about helping them. Once they lose their privileges for 24 hours a few times, they don't want to do it again. Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely. Well, for sure, praise is a positive consequence, of course. In fact, I'm just going to throw this out there right now. This is out of order, but I teach 5 teaching styles, how to teach your children. The very first one and the very most effective one is praise. For every 1 time that you correct your children, you should be praising them 6 to 10 times. So, and praising isn't just like, good job. Praise is like, wow, your handwriting is so neat. I can tell you've been working on this. It's actually describing, it's analysis. Remember how I said analysis? That's the first thing. When you praise, you analyze. When you correct, you analyze. Analysis is key. So praise for sure. I gave an example of the little bags of what I'm doing. Sometimes I set up what I call motivational systems. But other positive consequences might include other things we set up, like maybe, you know, we're going to go somewhere or whatever. They also are just like the day-to-day, you know, just they get to sit around and read their book and go play piano to their heart's content. And those are positive things. A lot of us think of those as drudgery. My children look forward to sitting at that piano. I have to pull them away. And if they lose the privilege to be able to play it because they lost their privileges for 24 hours, it's like torture.
Mm-hmm. Just a question. Doesn't it work the same way around, though? I'm wondering, like, if you give them negative consequences as, like, doing a chore, won't they assimilate that with something negative? Like, oh, I remember that when I was a child, I had to do this.
No.
Doesn't that happen?
No, it's a good question. And really, that has a lot to do with your tone. So I spent all that time talking about trust and love and acceptance and everything because when you tell someone that they've done something wrong, when you're going to correct them, I immediately describe first. I don't react. And so what I always say is I say, just now. So I might look at them and I'd say, just now, I gave you an instruction to go and load the dishwasher. You looked at me, you kept a calm voice and a calm face, but you didn't say okay. And you didn't go do it and check back. So I know that you're choosing not to follow instructions. What you should have done was, you should have looked at me, kept a calm voice and a calm face, said okay, done the task immediately, and then checked back. Since you chose not to follow the steps for following instructions, then you've earned an extra chore that will be done after you do this other one.
And if,
or can we send our kids to you?
Actually, I can. There is a fee, which costs a lot more than coming to this conference or buying my course. I do. People fly me out to their houses, but you know, I can and I do. But I, you know, it isn't something that I couldn't do with everyone in the whole room in 1 year, right? So anyway, yes, at the back. Yes.
Have self-government. And that is, I don't know.
Yes.
It's all about you and not them. And we've got to figure out,
yes,
how to stay in self-government.
No, you're totally right. And that's your power. That's your power. And the next class, The Power of Calm, I go even more deep into that. That is your power. That is your confidence. That's where it's rooted, in your own self-government. And here's the deal. Now, this is the, like, the, and you get a set of steak knives. Okay. Listen, there's the sales pitch. But when you are learning self-government, you don't have to wait until you got it completely figured out to teach the children. Because as you're learning it, you are then so inspired to help them learn it. And them seeing you working on it gives them the motivation to know that it works and it's worthwhile. It can happen at the same time. So don't think you have to be perfect first. I do believe in redos. You can do them whenever you want. Okay, what time do I have to end? Does anyone know? Okay, so I've got 20 minutes, right? Okay, good. I'm sorry for the recording. Sorry. Okay.
I just had a question about when you implement the series of consequences. I understand from your dishwasher example, the child didn't report back to you. You're going to give them an extra chore.
They earn. They earn an extra chore.
Yeah, they earn.
I never give ever because, yeah, because it's their self-government. What's that?
How do you take that a step further where you go into the major maintenance and the sodas? What would happen?
You mean if they all of a sudden go? Yeah. Right. Okay. Then that's when I would do the rule of three. Okay. And. Well, should we talk about that first, or should we talk about the four basic skills? Okay, we'll talk about the rule of three. I just want to get to the four basic skills, so we will do that. Okay, the rule of three goes like, we're really jumping to the end of the presentation here, but unless you want to wait. what do you think? Raise a hands. Who wants to do rule of three right now? One, two. Oh, number six. Let's do number six first. Hold your question. Don't let me forget it, because we are going out of order if we do that. Okay, so number six. Number six is family meetings. My family, when I grew up, they called them family councils, but really what they were was family fights. And we had these family fights every Monday before we would supposedly have a family fun time, but 9 times out of 10, the family fight was just so exciting that none of us ever did the family fun time that was supposed to follow. So, what I know is what makes family council turn into family fight. I also know the beauty of why we are admonished to have it and what makes it good. There is a certain format that you can follow for family meeting, which is what I call it. And in that family meeting, your family can take ownership of everything that's happening in the home. And they can unify. And there doesn't have to be any finger pointing, any name mentioning, nothing, and problems get solved. I'm going to really, really quickly, this is a family meeting sheet, the sheet that we use. We keep them in a binder in our house. And then we can refer to them all often. They're kind of part of our family history, actually. It's sort of fun to hold on to them. And every person takes a turn leading the family meeting. We have them once a week, at least once a week. When we started doing them, when we were first implementing a lot of the principles that we wanted to change into our home with our foster children, we ended up having them like every day after dinner for like 15 minutes because there were so many changes that we needed to make. And it was a major paradigm shift for mom and dad, you know, because my husband, he'll be the first to tell you, is not, well, I shouldn't say is, was not a patient man. And he really did buy into the philosophy that if it hurts, it's going to teach you. You know, he didn't ever hit anybody. He wasn't like that. But he was definitely more of a disciplinarian instead of a teacher, a nurturer, a person that somebody would come to. And he has changed. And in the father's class, hopefully he gives you all of his tips on how he does that. Anyway, this is the family meeting sheet. In the packet that we send out because of the convention, this sheet will be in there. There are a lot more details on family meetings in the book, Parenting House United. But on the top of the sheet, it says, time began and then time ended. And that is because one of the things that changed family meeting into family fight is it goes too long. There cannot be a meeting that lasts any longer than 20 minutes, tops. So you say, time began, and then you say, okay, our projected time to end, is it 3:52? And then you project to end then. If you get to 3:52, the person in charge of the meeting either needs to call for a revote for everybody else to decide if they want to, you know, still keep going, because sometimes they do, or if they want to just end and then we'll pick it up with the next meeting, you know, on some of the other topics that needed to be discussed or something like that. So 20 minutes, that's one key thing. I also mentioned we don't point fingers. If anybody is ever going to say a topic that needs to be discussed, they say, I've noticed that we seem to have a problem with taking our dishes over after meals. Now, there might only be one person that has that problem, but do we need to say Bobby has a problem taking over dishes after meals? Because then what happens to Bobby? It turns into family fight, right? Okay, Bobby, he's a smart guy. He's got a brain just like me. And Bobby knows when he doesn't take over his dish. He knows that. I can trust that. I believe in trust. So when I say we have a problem, we attack it as a family. And nobody cares about if it's Bobby's problem or Susie's problem. It's just a family problem. And so then we're going to decide on a positive consequence or a negative consequence to handle that problem. That's how we speak in a family meeting so that we don't start pointing fingers, because that also turns it into family fight. Okay, then we put the date and we put who it's led by. Every single person gets an opportunity. Even small children can leave the meeting and moms and dads can write out. They're clapping. That makes me nervous. Okay, can write out the meeting for them. I'm hurrying really fast now. Okay, so and then we say announcements. And when we say announcements, then that means that the family lists everything that's going to happen in the week. Like, oh, I've got dance on Thursday. This is where you go through the family schedule. We try not to let our family schedule take longer than 10 minutes. My husband and I have a meeting prior to the family meeting to make sure we've got a lot of the particulars worked out. Okay? And then, or so-and-so, I got my birthday. I earned my privileges every day last week. Whatever. This is the family brag time. This is where you plan the upcoming week and you talk about all the great things that have happened. Then the person leading the meeting says topics. And we start with the youngest person. So maybe a little two-year-old, you know, Tina, we start with her and we say, Tina, do you have a topic? And she might say, apples? And the person leading the meeting knows that then you say, okay, everybody who likes apples, raise your hand. Okay, moving on. Then we go up. And the last person who gets to give a topic is mom or dad, because mom and dad, they almost always have a topic. And we want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to buy into the topic idea, that they get a chance to have a voice, whether they just say apples or whether they say, no, I really don't. Then that's fine. Sometimes our topic is only one thing. What should we do for our family activity this week? Like, that's our topic. Because things are running so smoothly, there really aren't any issues. But we usually do have other topics here and there. Okay, then there's a thing for rationales. I'm just going to quickly tell you. I can't go through this whole form or it'll take too long. But we take votes. So the person in charge of the meeting says, okay, we need to have a vote. How many are in favor of this idea, this negative consequence for this, or how many are in favor of this positive consequence for this? And then everybody raises their hand and they take a vote. Now, if something is being decided that is immoral or goes against, like, the family budget, for instance, or something like that, like maybe they're like, hey, for our family activity, let's, you know, go to Lagoon. Well, that's fun, but we might not be able to afford it at that particular time. So then the parents do, you know, they can veto stuff. They can say, well, you guys, we're going to need to think of something else because that's just not going to work out. You know, we can't do that. Let's come up with another option. So we do take votes. We try to use the words fair, effective, concern, and pleasant, because those are words that are the reason for making a change in a group. If something is more fair or feels more fair, they really do care about fair. I believe fair is a myth, and so I don't try to, like, make my life fair for the kids. But when you're talking about legislation in a group, fair does come into play oftentimes. And so that's a reason. And then concern, showing concern for each other, and then if it makes the home more pleasant. Okay, so that was number 6. And then, so what we're going to do is we are going to discuss the rule of 3, because I promised that I would do that. And then we're going to talk about the 4 basic skills and hopefully touch on a few other things. The rule of 3. So in the case where load the dishwasher, we talked about before, and I said you've earned an extra chore. Now some kids who are really used to power struggling or have a habit of being defiant, they might do something like, yeah, just make me, you know, or, right? I mean, there's just all kinds of, or they might just like ignore you and walk away. Or they might scream at you, or they might melt on the floor, or whine or pout, or whatever it is. What's that? Or they retreat, and they go climb a tree. There are some parents who retreat. So if you have a child who retreats, check yourself to see if you're a retreater, because you might have taught them that. Yes?
Mine says, okay, and then when I leave the room, they wander off.
Okay.
And then I have to go hunt them down.
Okay, so they say, okay, and then they still leave, and just, so it's passive-aggressive defiance, okay? And so what they're doing is they're showing you that that you have to be over the, they want you to still govern them because it's easier than doing it themselves, okay? So the only way to help them learn how to do it themselves is to be very consistent with what your structure is. So if your structure is if somebody doesn't follow instructions, if they can't do that one thing, because that's the basic of the 4 basic skills, I'm going to tell you what the 4 are. They are following instructions. Okay. Okay. They are following instructions, accepting no answers or accepting criticism, accepting a consequence, and disagreeing appropriately. I'm going to say them one more time. Following instructions, accepting no or accepting criticism, that's the same one, accepting a consequence, and disagreeing appropriately. The one that people often forget is accepting a consequence. She's telling me her son will say okay, but he doesn't do it. That means he's not actually willing to self-govern himself yet, or to accept that it really was his problem. So he wasn't accepting a consequence. Disagreeing appropriately is number four. Okay, so at that point then, you would say to him, if he has a habit of doing that, I'm going to come back in a few minutes to check and see how you're doing. And then you come back, and if he is not there doing and following through, then you know that he might be out of instructional control, especially if it's like he just earned a consequence, and then he's not doing the consequence. Chances are he's out of instructional control, even if he seems as calm as day, because he's not respecting you. Without respect to you, you can't teach him anything. That is the basis of the relationship with parents and children. It's almost gone from our society, but there is hope. We can teach our children the skills to respect. And that's really what's happening, is he's just not respecting you at all. So he is out of instructional control, even if he's not angry. So then what you would do is you would come to him and you would do the rule of three, and it looks like this. It looks like I say a statement, then I'm going to do three things three times. I'm going to give a pre-teach, which we haven't even talked about yet because we're out of order. And then, but you'll see what it looks like. I'm prepping, okay? Then I'm going to give an instruction. That's number two. Then I'm going to give a correction if he doesn't follow the instruction. Then I'm going to do it again, three times. I'm going to show you what it looks like so that you have an idea. This is if the person's screaming, yelling, maybe they're totally calm, but they just won't follow instructions, whatever it happens to be. So then I'm going to say to them, it seems to me that you might be out of instructional control. Now, my children know what that term is, and so you're going to have to educate them on what that means. This type of parenting is not like a mysterious type of parenting. They know everything. This isn't about tricking them into anything. This is about you teaching them how to govern themselves. That's very personal. They've got to know the whole procedure and everything to expect from you. And the beautiful thing about that is their anxiety will go away when they know exactly what to expect every time they've done something wrong. If they don't know what you're going to do, you better believe they're going to be thinking up the next lie or whatever it is, because they're anxious. And that's what happens when people have anxiety. Okay, so I say my statement. It seems to me that you might be out of instructional control. And then I say, I'm going to give you an instruction. If you choose not to follow the first instruction, then you will be choosing to earn a major maintenance. Then I will give you a second instruction. If you choose not to follow the second instruction, then you will be choosing to do some problem-solving exercises, or sodas. Then I'm going to give you the third instruction. If you choose not to follow the third instruction, then you will be choosing to lose your privileges for 24 hours. That's my prep. Well, I'm not done yet. Here is the first instruction. That's my whole prep. I need you to close your eyes and take three deep breaths. I almost always use the same one. And then they either say okay and you praise them, or they don't. Follow the steps to following an instruction. So then I say, just now I gave you an instruction to close your eyes and take three deep breaths. You didn't look at me. You didn't keep a calm voice and a calm face. You didn't say okay. You didn't do the task immediately, and you didn't check back. So I know you're choosing not to follow the instruction. You have chosen to earn, to do a major maintenance as soon as you are in instructional control. Now I'm going to give you, that's my correction. Now I'm going to give you a second instruction. If you choose not to follow the second instruction, then you will be choosing to do some problem-solving exercises or sodas. Here is the, then I'll give you a third instruction. If you choose not to follow the third instruction, then you'll be choosing to lose your privileges for 24 hours. Here is the second instruction. I need you to close your eyes and take three deep breaths. Okay? And I often say, okay, so that they'll remember to say, okay. It helps them out. Then if they do, great, praise them. If not, then you do a correction. Just now, I gave you an instruction to close your eyes and take three deep breaths, and you wouldn't look at me. You didn't keep a calm voice and a calm face. You didn't say okay. You didn't do the task immediately, and you didn't check back. So I know that you've chosen not to follow the instruction. Since you've chosen not to follow the instruction, you've chosen to earn to do problem-solving exercises as soon as you are in instructional control. Now I'm going to give you the third instruction. If you choose not to follow the third instruction, then you will be choosing to lose your privileges for 24 hours. Here is the third instruction. I need you to close your eyes and take three deep breaths.
That's it? I mean, you say that every time?
Yeah. You can change it up if you want to, but really, like, for them, because then if you start changing it up a lot, then they'll be like, well, I don't like that instruction. Give me that other one. What? No, just whatever. It's not about what you like. It's about, do you respect me? Are you willing to follow an instruction? Because if you can't follow an instruction, I can't teach you anything. So let's just go ahead and take it all the way to the end, and then you can handle your own consequences and then be ready to be taught if you can't be ready to be taught right now. And so, anyway, and you notice my voice tone, right? I'm not going to finish it, but you know how it goes. Then if they stay out of instructional control, then they stay out of instructional control. You don't stay with them anymore. You give your attention to the children who are happy and good in your family. Well, I'm not saying they're bad. That's probably the wrong term. But to the children who are happy, who are doing what they should, who are following instructions, you spend your time with them. And then you just go check on that one every 10 or 15 minutes and say, are you ready to follow instructions yet? And they might be like, huh. Okay, they could stay out of instructional control for a couple of hours, you know, or days. They could scream in your face while you're saying that. It doesn't matter. They could run away. In our family, if a person runs off when I'm in the middle of the rule of three, they are automatically accepting to lose all of their privileges for 24 hours. Okay, back there. Age of child?
9.
Okay. Because really, you don't do the rule of three until they hit, like, I would say at least 6. You know, probably 7 or 8. There's a way that I use timeout as a calm down place, and then they get a regular correction afterward if they are young children. I'm glad I thought of that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Do you use these same techniques for kids who have, like, severe ADHD?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. And he would say, never mind, I'll do it, I'll do it, I'll do it. And then you still give them the consequence, even though they're like,
see, back. I'll tell you what that shows you. Okay. That shows you that they actually can self-govern themselves. Right there. It shows you, right? Wait a minute, I changed my mind. Ding! I'm a new person, right? Like, they can. Every single one of us can, so don't ever convince yourself that they are not able.
Because
so then you praise them and you say, wow, you are doing so good at remembering that instruction that we just gave. So now I know you're ready to follow instructions. I'm going to give you another instruction to see if you're for sure in instructional control. And in that case, you would give them instruction to straighten the pillows on the couch or, you know, something else, you know, wipe off that chair, I don't know, but just something teeny to see if they can look at you. These are the steps of following instructions, by the way. Look at the person, keep a calm voice and a calm face, say okay, do the task immediately, and then check back. And if they can do all of those things, then you don't need to proceed with the rule of three, okay? All right, I want to tell you about the other 4 basic skills. Just so that we have them under our belts. And then if I can, I'll touch on a couple of other things. So the second one is accepting a no answer or accepting criticism. Oftentimes we have to tell our children no. And the steps are very much like the ones I just gave you for following instructions. You look at the person, and the reason why they look at you is because they have to be taught. If your heart is going to touch their heart, the windows of your soul need to be open, okay? If they can't look at you, they are not ready. So they look at the person, keep a calm voice and a calm face, very much the same, and a calm body. You can throw that in there too if you want to. Then they say okay or ask to disagree appropriately. They can always ask to disagree appropriately. And you always will hear that unless they've already disagreed appropriately about that issue, like really recently. And then they drop the subject. Drop the subject means they're not going to talk about it anymore. They'll disagree appropriately or that's it, it's over. They're not going to walk out of the room and hit the wall or under their breath or give you a scowl or not talk to you. If they can't drop the subject, chances are they are not accepting a no answer and they might be out of instructional control. Okay, accepting a consequence, that's number 3. The steps are so similar. You look at the person, keep a calm voice, face, and body. Then you say okay or ask to disagree appropriately. Then you do the consequence immediately, and then you drop the subject. So it's the very same as the one before, but drop the subject. But accept a consequence is huge. You cannot learn to govern yourself unless you can accept when you've done something wrong and pay the price. You have to allow yourself to be governed by a higher law, or you cannot learn self-government. So accepting a consequence is gigantic. They need to be able to accept their consequences. If you just drag them in their rooms and shut the door and hold on to it until they stop struggling, then they're not accepting a consequence. You're in a power struggle, and they might accept defeat, but that's way different than accepting that they've done something wrong. Okay, then the last one, disagreeing appropriately, because I know I'm getting close to time here. The last one is, you look at the person. You keep a calm voice and a calm face. You say, okay, or no, you don't ask to disagree. Wait a minute, I'm messing it up. I just watched her go to the thing. Hold on, we're starting over. Disagree appropriately. You look at the person. You keep a calm voice and a calm face. Then you say that you understand the other person's point of view. Then you share your point of view. Then you accept their decision. And it looks like this. David, will you be my dad for just a minute?
Sure.
Okay, your job is to say no. Can you handle it? Okay, this is how it goes. Dad, can I dye my hair blue?
No.
Okay, Dad, I understand. Oh, may I disagree appropriately? Say yes.
Yes.
Sorry. Okay, Dad, I understand that you don't want me to dye my hair blue because it goes against our family standard that we don't have colored hair. But I'm in this play, and it's called A Midsummer Night's Dream, and I'm supposed to be a fairy, and all of the fairies are supposed to have different colored hair. And so I picked blue to be the blue fairy because I thought it would match my eyes best, but I thought maybe we could do like a temporary type color, and I could just have it for the weekend just to be in the play, and then we could wash it out. What do you think? Would that be okay?
I understand your point of view, is that what I'm supposed to say?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, you don't need to do your part. You could say whatever you wanted. You could say, no, I'm sorry, honey, we'll get you a wig. You know, whatever. Or I'll talk to the director. Or you could say, oh, yeah, sure. Now that you explain it like that, that makes a lot more sense. Okay, so that's disagreeing appropriately. You see how I told that I understood why he would say no. And then I understood. Now, if they disagree appropriately with you, that is huge self-government. Gigantic self-government. And so most of the time, 9 times out of 10, it's got to work. You can't be like standing on your wall about not having a cookie before dinner. You know, I mean, come on. They disagreed appropriately instead of whined. Whoa! Now that's a big deal, okay? But like if it's hair dyeing, you know, stand on the wall. Okay, anyway, I think we had a question back here and a question here. We'll take a few questions and then we'll probably have to end sooner. They'll kick us out of here. Okay. It is something that you can help him do. Stand up, Jennifer. Okay, so if I had a child who had a hard time looking at me in the eye, the point is your relationship needs a connection, okay? And so I would hold out both my hands. I'm going to only hold out one right now. And I would require that when I talk to them, they put their hand on top of my hand, okay? Because then they at least have a connection with me. They can feel me. Can you feel me, my heart? I can feel you. You feel good. Okay, so they need to be able to feel you, and that's what the eyes do. There are some people that is a skill they definitely have to work on, but oftentimes when you touch them, they will look at you. Okay, so try that and make that be a part of when you're instructing him that there's a touch that happens of some sort. Okay, there was another question.
Back to accepting consequences.
Yeah, accepting consequences.
I have kids who really like to disagree appropriately about consequences. Mm-hmm. And I've always said, you can't disagree appropriately, you earned that consequence.
They can disagree appropriately about the consequence. They always can, and you need to praise them for that. When you're correcting a child or telling them no for something, you can always praise them. So you can praise them for accepting that consequence and then tell them, however, I do believe you earned that and you're going to need to accept it now, okay? And then they can open. So it's fine. You don't have to like shut them down on that one. The fact that they're choosing to disagree appropriately all the time sees that they're really getting weight. My calmness makes a difference. That's what we want them to understand, because their calmness is confidence. I could share so much more, and I will throughout the weekend. We have a booth over in the hall over there. You're welcome to come visit us. I'm going to be doing another class, The Power of Calm, coming up, and we'll talk a lot more about calmness and how to help children be calm and how to be calm ourselves, and maybe even touch on some of the other things we missed in this class, which are many. Thanks, everybody.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.